The Tom Woods Show, episode 1824.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, have you heard of ClickUp? It's the fastest growing productivity tool that's saving everyone one day a week. ClickUp is used by companies like Airbnb, Google, and Uber to get more done in less time by replacing work apps and bringing your tasks, docs, goals, chat, and more into a single place. ClickUp is free forever, so sign up today at clickup.com/woods. Hey folks, Tom Woods here. I got a couple great episodes coming up that I'm afraid I'm going to forget to tell you about at the end. I think I'm just going to wrap up and forget to tell you about them because of my stupid middle-aged brain, so I'm going to tell you about them right now. Tomorrow, I got Bob Murphy, the economist, coming on, and we're going to talk about what's going on with this whole Reddit GameStop thing. In case you're wondering what the deal is, we're going to try and figure that all out, sort that all out for you. Then Monday, I have a guest with a brand new book on socialism as a secular creed and the way it does, in fact, resemble a religion. It's a very interesting study of socialism all over the world. So it's just going to be great. Well, today I am very glad to be joined by Alan Mosley, who is host of It's Too Late with Alan Mosley. I'll link to his podcast at tomwoods.com/1824. And I'll just say this about Alan. He is definitely one of the good guys. He is well worth listening to, and his judgments are sound. I mean, heck, he likes old Woods here. That ought to tell you something. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Tom. I'm here with another top-tier libertarian podcaster.
Oh, who would that be? Oh, you mean me? I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean you.
Appreciate that. Well, listen, man, you did it. You achieved your goal in advance of the 2000th episode. You got onto the Tom Woods Show. And you know how you did it? You just badgered me slightly, and that worked.
I know. Break out the champagne, baby. We made it.
No, listen, folks. If you think that badgering old Woods here is how you get on the Tom Woods Show, boy, did I just open a can of worms. Don't even think about it. Okay, Alan has done it, and that's it. That's it. There's one. No, honestly, look, I think Alan is genuinely one of the good guys in the libertarian world, and you should listen to him, and you're going to love what you hear, and he's very entertaining and very well-informed. He's a youngster, unlike some of us over-the-hill types. So Alan Mosley is part of our libertarian future, so check him out. Let's talk about First of all, let's just talk about you and your show, because I do want to let people know about it, because you actually are using kind of like a studio. If people could see where I record the Tom Woods Show, it doesn't really look like a studio. It's a comfy little office with anyway, I'll describe it another day. But you actually had to endure some inconveniences related to the whole COVID lockdown fiasco.
Sure.
Now, where are you located?
So we have filmed the show at Osborne Studio and Sound here in Columbia, Tennessee. So it's the home of James K. Polk for the statists out there, about 45 minutes south of Nashville. So it is an actual recording studio and venue all in one, and that's where we have recorded the program. It actually started out, of course, people who remember the old show, it was the gold standard before it was It's Too Late with Alan Mosley, and that was a podcast rebirth of what was once a radio program here in Middle Tennessee that I was a part of. And it really literally started because I was recording some tracks at that studio with my friend Blake and got to talking to him about politics and saying, you know, I'm really thinking about starting this show thing back up. I'm just going to do it at home with some tin can and some string. And he said, oh, no. We're going to do that here at the studio because it's just, you know, we really believe from day one that, look, there's a lot of smart people out there. There's a lot of talented people out there. But, you know, it's really a full sphere. There's a lot of, I was not on the front end of podcasts. There was lots of podcasts already out there. But so how can we set ourselves apart? And one of the very first things was, well, let's really try to push the envelope of what we do in terms of production to really tell people, look, we're serious about what we're doing here. It is a hobby, but it's not just a hobby, and it's not just a passion project, right? Like, I'm going to treat this as if this is my day job, and that's kind of how it got started to now being that sort of late night show type thing.
So was there some problem related to lockdown, though, specifically?
So this past year, we actually had our episode 100 live show last March.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and it was great, and I was really happy for the people that came. But, you know, March was kind of that weird time where people were tangentially aware that there was this thing in the news, some virus was coming along. And I mean, at that point, even yours truly was thinking, oh, this is the next swine flu. If I just don't even watch the news, I'll never know what happened, right? I feel like a lot of people were still there in that February to March area. And it was right after that that the lockdowns and the mandates started happening. And our studio also doubles as a venue for events, weddings, concerts, that sort of thing. And we were just coming off our best year in terms of booking and events and parties at our studio. And we had already booked out, because we're predominantly doing nights and weekends, and it's when parties typically happen. We had already booked out through June by February 1st. I mean, we're on pace for the best year of business we've ever had. Well, as you can imagine, by the first week of April, most of those had all canceled on us. And it's not because they all turned up their nose at us and said, well, we're not going to do business with you. It's because they were seeing the news and the lockdowns. And sure enough, I tell people, you know, look, we're the kind of people that talk a lot about the injustice in the world and oh, the Fed's ruining the currency and oh, they're restricting our rights. But I think a lot of people can live their day-to-day not feeling a boot on their neck when they go out and live their normal lives, right? And look, I'm 35 years old, and I tell people, yes, there's lots of things wrong with the state, but I can live my life and not feel it. This past year was the first time in my life that I literally had the state come to my door, knock on it, and say, we need to see you turn that sign from open to close, or you're going to get a misdemeanor. That happened to me this past year. And I mean, and I wasn't even so much mad as I was blown away of, wow, that's where we're at. This actually happened to me today.
It was unbelievable that year. And I remember, as you say, March was this month where no one quite knew what was going on. And I have to say, you know, I wasn't so good in March. I was, well, I mean, first of all, I don't really reproach myself that much because in March, we didn't fully have a handle on exactly what was happening. And I wasn't saying everybody should stay in their houses for 10 months or anything ridiculous like that, or maybe sure, you need three masks on or whatever the latest directive is. But I was just thinking in terms of myself personally, I had a couple of concerts that I was planning on going to, and one of them wound up just being postponed. But on the eve of going to it, because they postponed it at the last second, I was considering going, but I had been on the fence.
Sure.
And just because I thought for my own safety, let me figure out what's happening. And then if it turns out it's nothing, then okay, I missed one concert, big deal. But by the end of the month and by into April, it was just clear to me that something was not right about this. And it was something was certainly not right about the way people were reporting it. But yeah, what a bizarre situation that we've all endured. But yet you persevered. And I guess I can't help asking, what was the deal? Why is it it's too late with Alan Mosley? What happened to the gold standard?
Well, I'll tell you what. I had been thinking about sort of a change in branding and direction for the show itself for a little bit before finally pulling the trigger. And a big thing is I had too many episodes in a row where I felt like the general gist of the program was, look at this hypocrite. Look at the hypocritical thing they did. Let's all harumph harumph because politician lied about a thing. And I thought, man, you get worn out, don't you? I mean, you just kind of get worn out with all the doom and gloom and all the bad news. And I'm sitting here looking at my audience and I'm talking to people. And I think sometimes people are desperate for good news. And I've gone on record saying, look, I don't begrudge people for whatever fancy they may have. Because look, man, people are desperate for good news and good times and hobbies and all that. But I felt like, you know, there is a market out there for people who genuinely want to be entertained and want to have people in their community, in their sphere that can have some humor, that can have some personality, and it not just strictly be libertarian philosophy or politics 24/7. The way I've put it recently is, you know, libertarianism or anarchism as political thought is great, but that shouldn't be your personality trait, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. So let's talk about what's been on your mind lately and the sorts of things you guys have been talking about over there. With me, it's been really, really hard as a podcaster not to be consumed by the virus. And the thing is, it's in a way somewhat hypocritical here because I've gone out of my way to tell people in the past that I'm not primarily a current events show. Sometimes I talk about current events, sure, but I also want to balance that with evergreen episodes that somebody could listen to in 20 years and it would be just as helpful. So I want to talk about history, economics, topics of that sort. And yet, I can't stop talking about this virus, the most current event of all current events. But it's because I feel like something momentous is happening with this that I can't just observe from the sidelines and just, you know, keep talking about the non-aggression principle in the abstract. I can't see how I could not talk about it.
Well, you know, I've probably had 10 episodes in a row now where somewhere in the episode I said, that's it. That's the last thing I'm going to say about the Modelo virus. And I'm never going to talk about it again.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, I only do a weekly show. It's a once a week production. So when I say 10, I mean, we're talking about 2.5 months of me saying, that's it. I'm never going to talk about coronavirus again. But I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that it absolutely dominates the headlines. So at a very minimum, I try really hard to make it not just about coronavirus news. I mean, people can go to Tom Woods for that. Here's corona, you know, I haven't done a lot of what you've done with saying, here's some charts, here's some data, let me talk to some experts specifically about that. And it's not because I don't find that incredibly valuable. I'm going to you for that and I'm enjoying that. But I can't do it. At a minimum, I want to talk about how some of the ripples of how this affects other parts of the world and not just specifically, let's look at the data of the virus itself. I think with coronavirus, in the same way, with lots of issues, at this point, as of January 2021, I think people have pretty much made up their minds at this point. If you're a part of the Biden-Romney consensus of the status quo, you've made up your mind one way about this thing. And if you're people more like ours, you've made up your mind the other way. And it doesn't mean one side is necessary. Like, I'm not even trying to pick sides per se of who is and isn't following the science. I'm just simply stating, as a matter of fact, most people have made up their minds at this point about which way the winds are blowing and what some of the greater effect has been. I'm trying to instead maybe turn attention more to, well, you know, let's talk a little bit more about regular life, and let's talk a little bit more about, you know, not to sound just hopeless optimism. Anyone who knows me personally knows I'm not a hopelessly optimistic type. But, you know, let's talk a little bit more about, you know, life getting back to normal and what normal is going to be and some of the things we miss and sort of that. I just, you know, like I said, the whole late night shtick that we do now is largely because, and I'll kind of buttress that with saying this. I do consider myself a libertarian. I am an anarchist. I don't vote. I don't endorse political candidates or anything like that. I try not to make the show exclusively about politics. But again, going back to the whole idea of, you know, my libertarianism is not my personality trait, I'm getting to the point where I actually don't even say the words libertarian and anarchist on the show anymore. I'm kind of taking the subtle nuance between, instead of saying the libertarian position on this is X, what I'm saying is my position on this is X. I happen to be a libertarian. You take that for what you want. Is there like a subtle distinction there?
Yeah, I think there is. And I understand where you're coming from on that. And the analogy is certainly not perfect with Michael Malice, because he doesn't ever use the word libertarian to describe himself. But
sure,
he doesn't really label himself that much. He says, I'm an anarchist, but he doesn't really go out of his way to do that. He just has interesting people on and provokes them into saying interesting things. And he incidentally happens to agree with me on a lot of stuff. But more interesting than that is that he's just a good interviewer and an interesting person with a lot of original thoughts.
Sure.
And, you know, in a crowded libertarian podcasting world, you know, that stands out. And there's some value to that.
And also, too, you know, we haven't had as many guests lately as we had in the past, and we're going to be scheduling more guests in the future. We haven't had as many guests on the show in the last 4 or 6 months or so. But I'm trying to do a better job if I do have a guest on the show. You know, if a Tom Woods comes on the show, you know, I'm a history guy. I know you're a historian. We could be geeks and talk about something in American history, and we would enjoy it, and there'd be a section of the population that would enjoy it. But that maybe is esoteric for some. Or you could come on and we could talk about politics or Rand Paul or the coronavirus. And again, some people might enjoy that. Other people might find that a bit esoteric. But I'm trying to do a better job of saying, well, we'll touch on those things, but I want to at least have a moment in the segment where the audience can see us talk as friends, as people, and get to know you, the person. Because again, you know, God bless all the people who want to change hearts and minds, but I think you might do a better job of changing hearts and minds if some of those people can see you as a human being and a neighbor and a friend and a personality and someone that they would like to associate with first, and then come to find out what some of your beliefs are. Not be throttled with your beliefs and then, oh, by the way, I'm Thomas.
I agree. Well, incidentally, there's a podcaster, not a libertarian, but a very, very successful podcaster who asks his guests all the same questions and who, to my ear, has a very fake, happy persona. Mm-hmm. And so what I'm getting from this is that this guy is determined not to share himself.
Yeah.
He's determined not to let me know who he is. He is just going to be that guy behind the microphone. And the thing is, I have no right to know anything about this guy. But if he wants to build, I don't know, it seems to me if you want to build a real community that's going to stick with you, be the whole person. Be that whole person and not just a guy behind a microphone asking questions. I don't understand why you would want to do that, but that's what he does. Let me switch gears here, though. Because something you wrote to me that intrigues me, because I'm inclined to think you're right, but I want to hear you riff on it a little bit. Apparently, one of your recurring themes has been that most people don't really have any principles. Now, mm-hmm. I think in their personal lives, they probably have some principles. I mean, in terms of they want to be honest when in business dealings and stuff like that. But sure. When it comes to politics and stuff and social life, they don't have principles. Now, what makes you say that, and what are the implications of that?
Well, probably the two things I've said on the show that have ever gotten me in the most hot water with just the generic random audience member who says, well, you know, I agree with most of what you say, but I don't like this. The two things that have gotten me in the most hot water is saying that most people don't have principles, and I really don't think that memes are particularly helpful. And that second one really being controversial with some people. But the thing is that you're right. Like, I know that the naysayer will say, well, when you say they don't have principles, you're just mad because their principles don't align with you. And I'm like, okay, maybe. But I think what it boils down to is there are a lot of people, there's a class of person, and this is not a small number of people, who find every political issue, every social issue, cultural issue, every economic, everything that can possibly happen, they find every issue distinctly unique. And when you look at everything as a distinctly unique issue with absolutely no overlap whatsoever, and you have no underlying foundation to which guides your decision-making, you know, if you're someone who believes in the non-aggression principle, then you don't necessarily have to be a Nobel laureate in a great many subjects for that to at least help to inform your opinion on a great many things. But when you find every issue individually distinctly unique and you have no underlying principles, then you might sell yourself to others as, well, I'm a very learned individual because I'm putting great thought and exercise into every single issue to come to an informed decision. It may be an informed decision. I don't mean to say, well, these people are stupid because they don't agree with us. But I find that to be really hollow. And I've kind of furthered that point recently with that class of people, the principle-less person who finds every issue unique, labeling them a hypocrite is a completely hollow accusation. Because if I'm that person and I don't consider myself a hypocrite because I like something Joe Biden did, but I didn't like that exact same thing when Donald Trump did it, but I consider these distinctly unique perspectives, right? Because one of them has the word Trump and the other one has the word Biden, therefore they're unique. So calling that person a hypocrite doesn't work. And I guess maybe this is more a comment to our people who are genuinely trying to engage with their friends and neighbors, is calling them a hypocrite. You may be right. Maybe they are a hypocrite, but you're not really making any headway in the debate. Whereas if you can say why that thing is right or wrong in a vacuum, no matter whose name is tied to it, you're at least putting forth an argument. And that's why I tell people I'm very wary of the people who you can give them 100 question quiz and they have to spend an hour answering each question because they have no base with which to guide their decisions.
I hear that, and I would rather make the argument on the merits. And I don't use the word hypocrite, but I consider it a pedagogical device to be used to benefit other people, to show them that you shouldn't take people seriously when they say, I'm against war, when they're obviously not. It just depends on who's launching the war. Or they say, I really think we need to get a hold of, you know, we got to get this problem solved. And then you have the problem, exactly the same problem under two people, but they're only agitated about it under one. I think it's useful for the world to know these people are unreliable. Don't count on this person to back you up if you have one cause you believe in deeply, because they'll be around every 4 or 8 years to help you, but in the interim, you're not going to hear from them anymore. I think there's some value in, because it, here's what it teaches people. It teaches them the poison of politics, that if it weren't for politics, there's almost nothing else in life where this is true.
Sure.
Like, for example, there might be some slight reforms you want to see made in the U.S. Chess Federation, but you're not going to change your mind on that depending on who's the president of the U.S. Chess Federation, right? Who would? It's only in politics where we say, well, I better shut up about the things I believe for right now because it might be inconvenient for this person. There's no other part of life where we do that. So I think it educates people about the uniquely poisonous aspects of politics.
I'll give you this. If you can bring the conversation that direction, then it at least opens the door to making a more anarchist perspective more palatable to the mainstream. Because, I mean, in effect, you're sort of making the argument that while group X and Y are debating what the political answer is, you're making the argument, well, maybe there's not a political answer. I feel like that was a bit of sort of the late stage Ron Paulian perspective, which was, well, there's a lot of issues. There's no doubt about that. But the answer might be that there's not a political answer to these issues and we need to look elsewhere to solve them. So don't get me wrong. If you can steer the conversation in that direction, more power to you. But I'm afraid that most people are mired, that there must... It's almost like accepting defeat. Like, I don't think you or I would look at the anarchist perspective as an accepting of defeat. I think it's just going a different direction. But I know that there's a lot of people out there that want to be attached to the winner, that want to be voting for the winner, that want to be a part of the winning team, and that them admitting that there's not a political answer feels like a defeatist position. I don't agree with that. I'm just saying I know there's a lot of people that feel that way, and I hope that they don't continue to feel that way, but I don't think that pointing out hypocrisy necessarily works. Again, I do consider people like that hypocrites. It's not that I don't consider that hypocrisy. It's that it's not just that calling them that word isn't going to win you any friends. It's that they don't recognize the word. They don't recognize that what you're saying and doing is hypocritical. So it's just a lost phrase. And I'll end that point by saying, I try my best not to make every show and every segment on my program about look at the hypocritical thing this hypocrite said and did, because, I mean, any one of us could just make the hypocrite show with Tom Woods, and every single episode would be nothing but what some hypocrite said or did, and it just gets old.
Hey, folks, let's take a quick minute to thank our sponsor. I heard a crazy statistic the other day. Apparently, the average person is productive for less than 3 hours out of an 8-hour workday. So that means 5 hours of wasted time? How can that be normal? Well, normal, and try ClickUp. ClickUp helps you break the norm and get more done in less time by replacing all your unorganized work apps and bringing your tasks, docs, goals, chats, and more into a single shared workspace. ClickUp's customer service is unmatched, and they're making the world infinitely more productive. So join over 100,000 teams at companies like Airbnb, Google, and Uber who already use ClickUp to level up their productivity. With ClickUp, you'll save one day every week guaranteed, which means more time to spend with family, taking that ultimate road trip, or whatever you want to spend more time doing. ClickUp is free forever, so sign up today at clickup.com/woods. Well, let's switch gears. I want to ask you, even though you told me the thing about using the word libertarian and the way you describe yourself and so on, nevertheless, as I said at the beginning, I consider you to be one of the good guys. So I'm curious to know how you would characterize the state of the libertarian world right now and what its prospects for the future are.
Boy, that is definitely a tough one.
Yeah, it is. It is. That's why I want you to answer it, not me.
Well, funny enough, I listened to the debate between Eric Brakey and Dave Smith just recently on Lions of Liberty.
Yeah, I thought that was really good. That was really good.
I thought it was really good, too. I thought both gentlemen made some good points. I have good feelings about both of them.
Wait, hold on. This is a little inside baseball for some people, though. Can you tell everybody what the debate was about, who these people are and all that?
Okay, so Eric Brakey, which I believe he's been on your show at least once, right?
He has, yep.
Yeah, and so is the state senator from Maine, who I think is your classic work from change from within the GOP. You use the bigger established political vehicle for change and bring liberty to the GOP. And Dave Smith was taking the position of, well, I believe that that's not going to work, but you know, the Libertarian Party sitting here, it's the third biggest political party. You know, as far as changing from within goes, it's going to be a lot easier to change the Libertarian Party to a unabashedly, unapologetically libertarian representing party. So let's do that and try to make headway there. So that was the debate. And look, I'll tell you, I think both guys made good points. It was a very good debate in the sense of these are people who agree in principle 99% of things. I mean, the only disagreement at all is just political direction, right? But they agree on all the issues. I will say this, and I don't want to instantly make enemies of anyone on the program. I'm an anarchist who doesn't vote. I'm not a part of any political party. I can't imagine myself joining one. With that said, I tend to lean a little bit breaky. I tend to lean a little bit breaky because I feel like purely in the vacuum of I'm going to be politically active. I'm going to join a party. I'm going to vote. What should I do? I tend to think going the GOP route, but also particularly working more at a state and local level, is more likely to be a net good than joining the LP and trying to get third-party people on ballots, win third-party elections. I tend to side that way, but again, both people made great points. To answer your question more specifically, I wish I could say I was really optimistic. I'm not in so much as we're coming at the end of the Trump presidency era in this big populist movement. And in some sense, I don't have a lot of hope for Brakey's perspective in so much as I don't think the GOP can be particularly saved or changed or brought or worked from within. I think it's more likely than the LP candidates winning, but I don't think that strategy is going to work either. But just what I'm terribly afraid of, and I know this is something you've said before, is I'm not an LP person, but I understand the concept of wanting the LP to really reflect a unapologetically libertarian position because for better or worse, they do represent to the mainstream what a lot of people think libertarianism is about. And so if that's not representing libertarianism well, then it's kind of a non-starter for a lot of people. But what I'm terribly afraid of, and this actually touches on the whole not being a huge meme fan, is that I've used the phrase, a lot of people's understanding of libertarianism only runs meme deep, kind of like skin deep. And what I mean by that is, we all remember the Ron Paul 2008 and 12 days where we all had those Facebook friends who had Ron Paul Revolution just blanketed all over their profiles. And 4 years later, it all changed to Bernie Bros. They were all Bernie Sanders people. Now, I feel like an innocent explanation is a lot of people just were looking for the anti-establishment candidate, and they believed that Ron Paul was the most anti-establishment candidate in that year, and then they perhaps believed that Bernie Sanders was the most anti-establishment candidate the next time. But again, if there's no way you can believe that they were diehard libertarians one term and then became devout democratic socialists the next. I don't think they necessarily believe that either. I think it just goes to show that there's more people looking to latch on to a winner, and there's more people looking for popularity, populism, than there are people who really understand and digest the principles. And so I guess by that logic, I'm a little bit pessimistic. But I mean, in the post-Trump world and what may be the post-Biden world in 4 years, who knows, man?
Well, I am equally adrift here right now. I just did an episode the other day on where we are in the world and in society and at this moment in history. I think in terms of that debate on the Lions of Liberty podcast, the Smith versus Brakey debate, I thought Dave maybe got slightly the better of Eric in the sense that even though I'm in the LP and I support the Mises Caucus, I am very aware that there's a strong case to be made on Brakey's side. I know that. Even though I understand that the GOP is hopeless in a lot of ways and, sure. and you'd be bashing your head against a wall a lot of the time. Okay, but that's you're also bashing your head against the wall in the Libertarian Party too. But the example that I couldn't get out of my mind was, let's take my state of Florida. Let's suppose there had been a big libertarian challenge in the gubernatorial race. Then Andrew Gillum would have won, and we would all have been locked down, just like California, and my mm-hmm. kids would be miserable, and their lives would be ruined.
Sure.
And that would be all so that we could say we fought for liberty. I just don't see it. As a practical matter, I don't see that. And I raised that with some friends in the Mises Caucus, and they more or less said, well, we do have to be strategic, given we have limited resources anyway. We got to be strategic in where we, what races we enter.
Sure.
It's possible that it could be counterproductive to be in particular races. And yeah, if I wind up with Andrew Gillum, I don't see that that's made me any better off. And plus, I think the Republicans are better at the state and local level than they are at the national level. The national level, they can be very bad and frustrating. But sometimes at the state and local level, where you take foreign policy out of their hands, for one thing, they can at least slow down what the other side is doing. And that's very frustrating that that's all we can hope for. But unfortunately, that's all we can hope for right now. And that's better than zero.
Yeah.
So that's been the way I've thought about it. And so as somebody like you, you're not even into politics. So you can kind of look at this as a genuinely neutral third party, so to speak, looking at this and say, just listening to the sheer merits of it, if I were to do this, I would go the Brakey route. But you know, maybe I'll put on the show notes page, you know, this is, shows how fair-minded Old Woods here is. I'm going to direct people to somebody else's podcast. How about that? So we'll put that debate on the show notes page. But I really want to send people over to It's Too Late with Alan Mosley, because I want them to watch that. So let's put that also. Obviously, I'll put your show there. But that title, it's a late-night show, but when you say it's too late, do you mean that not just in a temporal sense, or do you mean that in like a philosophical sense of, like, you know, forget it, it's too late?
It was very intentional in the double entendre, because you can see it in our logo, because our logo is a starry night with the moon and the words on it, but the moon also has the clock dots and hands of the old Armageddon clock. And the minute hand is right past midnight. So I meant it both in the literal sense of it's too late, nothing can be done, the society's going to collapse, and nothing. I'm a collapsitarian. It's over. And I also meant it as it's a late night show. So that was very much intentional. I do want to just say really quick though, to kind of finish that political position point, that as fair as I can be to both sides, I would say this. Our mutual friend, Mike Meharry, is a really good friend of mine, and we talk more sports than we talk politics. And today's his birthday, ironically enough. So happy birthday, Mike. He will tell you that, you know, I like the GOP more as an opposition party than I do a party in power, for exactly all the reasons that we see Bushes and Trumps of the world, is that, you know, the GOP does a lot better when they're resisting Democrats than they do when they're driving the car. And I agree with you that on a state and local level, when you take the printing press and foreign policy out of their hands, there are some little R Republicans who can do some good. So I'm willing to concede that. And vice versa, whereas I don't, from a strategic standpoint, I'm not a big LP person. But if you did tell me, you snapped your fingers and now you've got the Libertarian Party of Harry Brown, and he's going on all the big time talk shows and telling them, strategically, I'm not here to win all the elections because I know I can't, but I'll tell you what I am going to do is I'm going to talk that crap, as they say, and I'm going to be completely unapologetic in my libertarian views. I think that there's room for that. So if it is done strategically from a political standpoint, so you're not, as you say, you know, sort of sandbagging a anti-lockdown governor in your own state, but at the same time, you're getting the message across. I can live with that. I can live with an LP that is strong on the message, but state and local politics that are strategic. I can live with that. And that's a lot coming from me, by the way, because I'm not going to run out to vote.
Yeah, I hear you. So what, obviously people find the program in the usual places, but do you have a website?
I do. So facebook.com/AlanMosleyTV and youtube.com/AlanMosleyTV is where you can see all the episodes and premieres. And my website is alanmosley.tv.
Okay, Alan, and then Mosley, Alan Mosley.
That's right.
So alanmosley.com. So I'll link to all this stuff at tomwoods.com/1824. Well, continued good luck, and I hope that, I know you were at the 1,000th episode event in Orlando for the Tom Woods Show, and I hope I'll be able to see you at the 2,000th.
I happen to know on good authority, Tom, that a contingent of folks who will be at my episode 150 here in just a couple of months will all be down in Orlando episode 2000. You just can't beat this community, can you?
Oh, they're just such amazing people. And I think I mentioned on my show recently that I was having dinner with a guy who, he likes what I do, but he doesn't really listen to my show all that much. And I just know him from the other half of what I do. I know him in the marketing world, and we had dinner together recently, and I was telling him about my 2000th episode event, and he was shocked and outraged that I wasn't charging anything to people to get in, because that's the way he thinks, right? He's a marketer. He's like, well, you have this big event, sure, Everybody wants to be there, why don't you charge them? And yeah, I mean, I charge for some things I do, because I I need to eat, and my time is valuable. But I just want to have a big party for all of us, and I'll cover it this time. How's that? You know, I'm going to take care of it this one time, and I'm doing it for the sake of everybody, so we can all just get together, and that there won't be anything holding you back. I can't spare the $25 to get in. Well, there ain't no $25. Just show up and have some fun with your old friends from the 2008 Ron Paul campaign you haven't seen in forever, and all these people and all the energy that we used to have, we're gonna recreate that at that event. And I'm so glad to hear that you and that contingent will be joining us for that. So alanmosley.com is the website. All the other links
are alanmosley.tv.
Oh my gosh, I am so sorry. Yes.
Oh, that's okay. Now my career is ruined. Thanks so much.
Thank you for correcting me swiftly. Yes, you're right. Okay, alanmosley.tv. And by the way, I actually like the .tv extension, because you know what to expect on it. I actually like .tv. If you can't do .com, I like .tv. Who's the bum at alanmosley.com?
You know, I don't remember. I didn't even get to have Alan Mosley on Twitter because, you know, some useless bum who's like a director of medicine in Jacksonville or something is the other
That's
Dr.
Funny.
Alan. How dare you be a more – I'm not even the most successful Alan Mosley.
Okay. Well, you know, look, when I went to get Tom Woods .com, for a long time, if you can believe it, I had the stupid and clunky ThomasEWoods.com. Awful, right? Awful. And – I wanted TomWoods.com, but it was being sold for $2,000. And this was back when I had some kind of following, but not enough to really justify spending $2,000. I thought, I'll show them. I'll use this clunky ThomasEWoods.com. And then finally I realized, no, I need TomWoods.com. I need to own that. But if I, a guy named Tom Woods, go up to him, you know, forget it. Mm-hmm. So I had my friend, a friend named Chris. And because his name was Chris, he was able to negotiate it down to $1,000. I thought, okay, I'll pay $1,000. And I got TomWoods.com. And ever since then, it's really paid dividends because of how often I use it. TomWoods.com/whatever. That just doesn't work with ThomasEWoods.com. That's just terrible. The more characters there are, bigger chance of typos.
For your listeners at home, everyone, trading stocks is down. Trading domains is way up.
Yes. Oh my gosh. You can flip domains. You can flip domains big time if you know what you're doing. That's a whole, I know a guy who does that. Like, he really, really knows what he's doing. It's not anything I'd want to try, but he really knows what he's doing. AlanMosley.tv. Mosley. AlanMosley.tv. That'll be linked at TomWoods.com/1824. Alan, thank you for your time. Continued good luck to you.
Such an honor, Tom. Thank you.
All right, folks, that's our episode. So remember, now see, I am remembering it after all. Tomorrow in particular, you got to listen to the Tom Woods Show episode 1825, because we're going to talk about this GameStop situation with the great Bob Murphy. So subscribe to the show at TomWoods.com/Apple, and I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.